2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host again tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko, and our return guest, Swit, Steve Switkowitz, will be joining us. Chet, on our last show 2 weeks ago, we were talking all the crazy Eagles moves and things that had happened, and then they went and topped it the very next day by signing DeMarco Murray to a long-term huge contract.
Yeah, right after I said on that show that there's no way they'd sign Murray since they had just announced that they'd sign Ryan Matthews. And I figured they wouldn't bring on a second free agent running back, especially one who would command a pretty large sum of money. I think that's the first time, by the way, Bill, I've ever been wrong about something on our show.
Well, we'll debate that a little bit later on as well. But, hey, before we get started with the Eagles, let's get our Eagles trivia question out there for listeners to win. The signed 8x10 color photo signed by both John Runyon and Trey Thomas, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectible in Havertown, PA, to the first person that calls in and correctly answers the question. And, Chet, I'm going to go easy on our listeners because we're going to give this thing away tonight. We, to see if anybody did their homework, since they didn't answer the question in our last show, we're going to put the exact same question out and see if anybody looked it up. So here you go. Nick Foles was selected in the third round of the 2012 draft. How many Eagles have thrown passes in the 3 years since then, including Foles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got that?
All right, got it.
All right. Our call-in number to answer the trivia question is 929-477-2855. Our ShopForKisses.org phone lines will be open throughout the show, also at 929-477-2855. So feel free to give us a call. We want to hear your take on the Eagles' moves. We're going to talk about a whole lot of other things, the March Madness, some Phillies, some Flyers, and Nerlens Noel and the 76ers, Chet. We're going to get to that as well. So here we go. Swit, welcome back to the show. And, you know, buddy, I know you have some strong Eagles and Chip Kelly opinions, and you've gotten the ire of some Eagles fans on Facebook, I see, recently.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me back on. It's good to be on with you and Chet again this evening. And, yeah, you're right. It was shortly after the free agency period with Kelly doing all the wheeling and dealing and whatnot. I got some colorful comments, if you will, from some of your loyal followers on social media and about my opposite opinion from the Kool-Aid drinkers, as you have a tendency to call them from time to time. But, you know, it's all good. That's what makes sports interesting. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a comment. And everything's good. We'll move on. But it made for some interesting back and forth.
Absolutely. Well, Chet, let's get started. Let's talk right away about DeMarco Murray. I mean, the Eagles now, with all their running back signings, now have the number two highest payroll of running backs in the league. That's with Ryan Matthews. Of course, Chris Polk is still here. We'll see where this all goes.
Yeah. The weird thing is it's become – something of a passing league in recent years, and now here are the Eagles with all these running backs. You wonder what that says about the team. You wonder what that says about Chip's faith in his, you know, new quarterback, Sam Bradford, to stay healthy and get the job done. Are they going to be a running team like Seattle was? I mean, Seattle certainly did okay with it, winning the Super Bowl and getting to the following Super Bowl. Of course, they got Russell Wilson, who's not exactly, you know, chopped liver as their quarterback. It's going to be very interesting. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, just as the Murray thing was happening, before we thought it might happen. Are the Eagles a better team now than they were like a month or so ago. I'm still not convinced they are. I know they still have to get a wide receiver in there and beef up the offensive line and, of course, add some defensive secondary help, particularly at cornerback. But, boy, I don't know what's going to happen with running back. How are they going to distribute the carries? Is Murray going to get 70% of them? Ryan Matthews, 20%. Sproles, 10%. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. We've all seen the numbers as far as what happens to guys who carry the ball and have as many touches as a guy like Murray did last year. They typically have a down year the next year. So that scares me a little bit. It's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
Absolutely. And Sweat, for you, I want to ask, you know, right now I believe the correct number is $8.6 million left in the salary cap. And we know we need a safety. We know we need a wide receiver. We know we need at least one offensive lineman and maybe two if they also move Evan Mathis, which would also free up some money. But, you know, one of the things that's really going to hurt them in my mind is it doesn't give them the flexibility to sign Fletcher Cox or Michael Kendricks early. And I think that's a huge mistake. I like both those guys. I think they both are Pro Bowl caliber players that I'd like to see them get locked up. And with the money that has to be allocated for the rookie pool, which I think is about $5 million, it just doesn't give them a whole lot of space right now.
No, it doesn't. And that was one of my points to some of the followers of yours on Facebook and social media, was that they, in my opinion, they put too much money of that salary cap into the running back and quarterback position, and knowing that they have holes remaining. For some of the things that I've followed here over the last couple days is, don't be surprised to see Michael Kendricks being moved, possibly not necessarily to move up for Mariota or to make a play for Mariota, but just to move in general for maybe a higher draft pick or draft picks. I wouldn't be locked in that those both of those players are going to be in an Eagle uniform by the start of the season.
Chad, what's your thought on Cox or Kendricks? Would you move one of those guys if an opportunity still? I still think there's going to be a move. I think there's going to be a major move toward the top, and I still think Mariota's in play. But would you include Cox or Kendrick in a deal if you had to?
Boy, I would have to be blown away with the deal to give up on either of those two guys. I mean, Kendricks was so good last year at linebacker, especially after Ryan's went down and, you know, Kendricks had to really take over. Cox had a great year, didn't make the Pro Bowl, but, you know, sometimes defensive tackles don't get the recognition that the other guys getting all the sacks get. I would hate to see them move either of those guys. I mean, if they want Mariota, they would have to do it, but I don't know. I think Chip maybe is really sold on Sam Bradford for whatever reason. I'm not, but, boy, Jeffrey Lurie is trusting in Chip Kelly, and I think he's going to go with Bradford. I don't think they're going to move up. I know they're talking about how much it would take and mortgaging the future, and I just don't think it's going to happen. So I wouldn't do it unless I was absolutely, positively, 100% sure that Mariota is the guy that they need, and if they're not going to, as Chip would say, mortgage the future to do it.
Well, I think the way I look at this thing, he's out of the mortgage the future deal, because he now has some players to trade, in my mind. So let's just say he moves Bradford and maybe not Murray with that gigantic contract, but Matthews or some other guys and throws in a draft pick to move up. Maybe he can do that and not have to give up three or four draft picks like originally was being thought about. So He sets up a package with some of these guys that he just picked up. He moves up, he gets his guy, still has his draft picks, doesn't have a lot of money left, but still has his draft picks. And, well, he would have money left, I guess, if he unloads Bradford. And then he goes and makes some more moves and he fills a few more holes. I think it can happen. I'm not convinced Bradford's that guy.
Can we get to draft night already? It's 5 weeks from Thursday night, and I just want to have this whole thing settled so I don't drive myself crazy thinking about it.
I told you guys I had an opportunity to go to Chicago this weekend to the big collector memorabilia show up there, and LeSean McCoy was there, and I happened to have an opportunity to sit down right across from him and talk to him while we were eating lunch, and it was actually really pretty cool. He was sitting there with his girl. He was sitting there by himself, and I walked over and started the conversation by saying, I just want to tell you I am one fired up Philadelphia Eagles fan. And his response says, well, those are the kind of people that are in Philadelphia, and that's why I like it there. That's how the conversation started. And, you know, he said a couple things that really he didn't badmouth anybody, really. But his comment that really struck me was that Chip really believes that he can run this offense without the players. He thinks the system is more important than the players. And, you know, we say that as fans, but that came from a guy that was in the system. And he started naming the same names that we always throw around and said, he got rid of Foles, he got rid of Macklin, he got rid of Deshaun. You know, he went back that far, and it just, to me, I really have a problem with that, and I have all along. But that was the big thing that LeSean said, and he also felt like the move that they made and then followed up with the other signings, you know, everybody keeps saying, well, they saved salary cap money and this and that. Well, in the end of the day, they really didn't, because now they have two running backs doing a job of one.
Yeah, and still no wide receiver.
So
go ahead, Swit. You wanted to say something, Swit?
I was just going to say, I mean, that's the whole point I was trying to make on the running back thing. You know, you have four capable running backs right now, and, you know, they say they're going to spread it around so Murray doesn't get the lion's share of the carries and you're not going to wear him down. But the thing is, if he's your number one running back, you got to feed your workhorse the ball for him to be productive. If you start limiting his carries to, you know, 15, 16, 17 a game, he's not going to be as productive as he was last year in Dallas. You got to be able to feed him the ball, give Murray his share. And today, Chip Kelly spoke with the media at the NFL owners' meetings, and he says he's going to have a bigger role for Darren Sproles this year. So there's only so many touches to go around, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he goes about distributing the ball.
It sure is.
Well, the other thing I think is going to be interesting is, you know, if we're going to be a run-first offense, which all claims are that's what this offense is supposed to be, you know, it's going to be a run-first finesse offense, I guess, rather than a run-first smash-mouth NFC East team that we're used to seeing with the Dallas and the Giants and the Redskins for all these years. It will definitely be a little bit of a different look if we're going to go that way. But I think in the end, you got to be able to throw the football in the NFL these days.
Yeah, it's a passing league. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, as Chet mentioned, you don't have a strong wide receiver core. Now, from what all the experts have said, it's a strong wide receiver draft. So I'm sure Chip will go out there and get one, maybe even two wide receivers, and he better, because right now there's not a whole lot to pick from in the free agency market unless you want to take a chance on Michael Crabtree, and I think there are a couple other guys out there, lesser names, but they need somebody. And Riley Cooper and Jordan Matthews and Josh Huff are not going to get it done.
No, and the other thing, I think, if you look at the draft, though, I think they have to go safety first. If it's today, you know, if there's no more moves between now and the draft, you've got to go safety first.
Well,
so
you
now
know,
you're looking
talking,
at wide receivers in the you know, second or third round.
I was talking with Mark Eckel last week. I ran into him, and we actually went out and had some dinner and drinks on Thursday. And Mark said they're probably going to go wide receiver first if they stay at 20. He said, because there's really not a whole lot of safeties beyond the one top guy whose name escapes me right now, and he'll certainly be gone by number 20. So he says if they stay where they are and, you know, don't move around in the draft, they will almost certainly go wide receiver because, as Swit just mentioned, it is pretty deep at that position.
One thing is with Kelly, you don't know which way this guy is going to go. He's playing, you know, it close to the vest, and it would not surprise me if he would go up there, if Mariota slipped, say, to 7 or 8 or a little lower, for him to go up there and get Mariota. If he doesn't do that, if that doesn't happen, I wouldn't be surprised to see him make a trade to go up and maybe try to grab a guy like the Cooper from Ohio State. You know, that he would look fantastic in an Eagle uniform.
Well, I'll tell you this. I did have a very brief word with Marcus Mariota at the show, and I just kind of walked by, and I only had a chance to say something. Didn't even know he would answer me, you know. But I said to him, I said, "Well, are you coming to the Eagles?" With a big smile on my face, and he said, "All I can really say is I'd love to have the opportunity to play for Coach Kelly again."
I'm sure he would.
So, yeah, I mean, so it's out there. But I will tell you this. Here's the rumor. Here's the biggest rumor that I heard while I was out there. And that is, and this one really surprised me, is that the New Orleans Saints are wanting to dump Drew Brees' contract and move up in the draft, and they want Mariota. And they're at 13. I don't know if that's doable. Drew Brees, I didn't look up his contract, but I know he's got a heck of a contract. And to get up there, you know, whether Tennessee would be willing to take him on to get to 2, I don't know.
From what I've read from a lot of these draft experts, the market is definitely going up. More teams are getting in on Mariota. You had mentioned the Saints. I also read that the Chargers might be interested because Philip Rivers – is refusing to sign a contract extension with the uncertainty of the Chargers franchise. They might be moving to Los Angeles in a year or two, and he doesn't want any part of that. So they might be in play for Mariota. Ken Wisenhunt, it was interesting to read from the owners' meetings that he says if Mariota's there at number 2, he's going to be my starting quarterback come week 1. I mean, I don't know if that's window dressing or – but. You know, how many times do you hear a head coach saying that? But there's the interest level is going up on Mariota, and we'll have to see how that plays out. But, you know, the Saints, it did surprise me, too, when I heard the Saints might be looking to move Drew Brees.
Yeah, what did you
think
about
that?
Yeah,
I think
that
was window dressing.
You ever thought Brees would be moved out of New Orleans?
I never did, no. I thought he was a lifer.
Yeah absolutely. And you know, I was actually in a conversation with our buddies Kevin McClure and Frank Kolachny the other day, and you know, I said to them, I said, you know, I think the NFL is changing quite a bit, and I'm not sure it's for the better, because I think what's happening is the teams don't want to sign that next contract. You know, the one that, you know, you're seeing guys being moved all over like the Eagles, and you're seeing a guy like Reggie Bush being cut loose, and you're seeing Adomican Sue not even be bid for by his own team. And, you know, I guess I can't blame him for $100 million. But, you know, I think the only thing that's going to be the same with your team is going to be the colors, because the players are going to be different year after year after year, because, you know, just as we're talking about Cox and Kendricks, you know, if they don't make a deal with them early, they come next year and they're gone. They're going to find the best deal they can get, and they're going to go. And I just think that's the way the league's going, and I'm not sure that's good.
And by the way, the safety that I was referring to is the guy from Alabama, Landon Collins, who's projected to go anywhere from 12 to 22. So he actually could fall down to around the 20 mark. So if the Eagles did want a safety and Landon Collins were available, he could be the guy.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, and one other comment about this show before. Well, I have a few other guys I want to talk about, but Jameis Winston was there, and he had a whole bunch of Florida State things to sign, you know, for the dealers, and there was one Tampa Bay Buccaneer helmet to be signed, and his agent would not allow him to sign that.
Ah, well, I could understand that. I mean, since they have the number one pick, and it would be kind of weird to have him sign that, you know, with the draft coming up in 5 weeks.
Yeah, but I thought, I'm thinking to myself, well, these guys are getting paid. They're really not going to care what they sign. But apparently they do. So Jameis.
By the way, funny he showed up for that show, but is not planning to attend draft night on April 30th.
Yeah, and I asked him, if he was going to be there, and he said he did plan to be. But then read the very next day, I think it was actually in the paper that day, but I didn't get a chance to read the paper because I was busy. But I saw the next day where that whole big story about him not going, but he said he planned to go.
It was about a week ago that I heard that he wasn't going. So I think he should be there. I think anybody who's going to be taken in the top 10 or 15 should be there for sure.
Well, but I'll side with him on this. If he wants to spend it with his family and his friends at his house, I'm okay with that. It's a family thing. It's not a made-for-TV thing. I mean, it's got to be the greatest day in a family's life to have your kid drafted as a number one guy and be going to become a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
I'd like to be sitting there with my son if that happened.
It is a made-for-TV thing, too, though.
That's a good point. I mean, my only argument there is if you know you're projected to be the first or second pick, I think you got to be there. And it wouldn't surprise me to have maybe the league put some pressure on them to be there, because it would certainly, I think it would be a black eye for the NFL if you don't have your first overall pick showing up for the draft. I don't think that would look right for the league.
Yeah, he should be there.
Well, yeah, but look at it this way. Again, I'm actually defending this guy. I find that hard to believe. But, if he does go there, if it's Marcus Mariota, it's not a problem. If it's Jameis Winston and all the baggage that comes with it and all the media questions and all the negative things that are going to come out and all the things he's going to have to answer for or give answers to, I'd stay home too. Now, he made those decisions that got him in those binds, but I'm sure he's got to be thinking, I got to move forward from this and I don't need all that.
Yep, we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, hey, I wanted to tell you guys a couple more things about the show that was really, really cool. I had an opportunity to go there, work with my buddy Chip Brady, who's a dealer. Always has a big booth there. It's really good. And I had an opportunity to work with the players in the back with all the dealer area on Saturday, and then I worked Chip's table on Sunday so that he could work in the back. So it was really cool, but I had an opportunity to sit down and talk for probably 15 minutes with Jim Otto. And what a treat. What a treat he is. The man's in a wheelchair. He's been in the Hall of Fame for what? He's 77 years old. I know that. And he's been in the Hall of Fame since the early 70s, I believe. And he's in a wheelchair. He's got one leg that's completely a fake leg all the way up to his hip, almost to his hip. He's got his other leg, he told me, was completely shattered. And he is the happiest guy you will ever talk to. I mean, he was nothing but a bright spot. And he just said that, he said, I got another car I need to get rebuilt. And he said, as long as I can get down there underneath it, he said, I can get it done. And says he goes fishing every day, and when he's visiting his family up in Idaho, he says, I can't get out there quite as far as I used to. He says, but I can get out there, and I sure as heck enjoy fishing and playing with the grandkids. I thought, what a doggone treat.
He played till 1974, by the way, Bill, and he went to the Hall of Fame in his first year of eligibility in 1980. But, yeah, he was a great one, one of the all-time greatest centers, played most of his career with the Raiders. I guess all of his career with the Raiders.
Yeah, and I think with the old AFL, I think he is on the all-time team.
Yeah, he played during the whole entire AFL history, I believe, like 1960 till the merger.
That's right. And, I don't know that this to be a fact, but I believe it is, that he had something like 74 surgeries in his career, and 28 of them were knee surgeries.
Yeah, I see that.
Playing in a, gee whiz.
Yeah.
But
and yet he's
still
around and happy to be around. So that's good. That's good to hear.
Happiest guy in the place. It was really really cool. Really cool guy to talk to.
No regrets. That's good.
Absolutely. And how about Dale Murphy? Dale Murphy, you know, he's cruising around the back area with his cell phone, taking a video that he's going to share with somebody, and I'm following him around telling him what each thing was. You know, he's like, who signed all these Tennessee helmets? What's this for? Oh, that's Jason Witten's going to be here. He's going to sign Tennessee helmets. Oh, and he's talking into his phone. Those are for Jason Witten. And, you know, so we're going around. He was like a kid.
Yeah.
So it was
yeah,
really
by all
good
accounts,
to see
another great guy.
Absolutely. And the other guy who really surprised me this weekend, it was really cool, was Pedro Martinez. Not one of my favorites, but he is now. He is after this weekend. He was really cool.
That's
so
good.
And one Peyton Manning was there, that, you know, for our collectors out there. This just blows my mind. Peyton Manning is there, and it's $350 an autograph, if you can
wow.
imagine that. And they were lined up. They were lined up. I don't know how many he ended up selling, but it was hundreds at $350
a
pop.
Amazing.
And Peyton was Peyton. Just as nice as he could be, just as genuine as you see him on TV, that's what he looked like this weekend. So, and then the other one that surprised me was Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick must be 6'6". I didn't look him up, but he's a tall, skinny dude. And he was a little more of the, you know, the jive dressing kind of guy. He had the complete gold-plated headphones around his neck while he was signing, and you know, you didn't see that from Mariota, you didn't see it from Winston, you didn't see it from Peyton, you didn't see it from Phil Simms, who was there also, but you did from Kaepernick. So definitely different cuts.
Yep. Glad you had an experience, a great experience out there, Bill.
Yeah, we're gonna do it again soon, I hope. That's the plan. But hey, let's take a minute and thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. You have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. All right, let's get our trivia question again, fellas. And this is the win that John Runyon and Trey Thomas signed 8x10 color photo, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that calls in and gives the correct answer. Here we go. Nick Foles was selected in the third round of the 2012 draft. How many Eagles have thrown passes in his 3 years, including Foles? Okay, so that's one. So how many others, including Foles? All right, again, our trivia question phone line is 929-477-2855. Okay, Chet, let's talk a little March Madness. What about the Villanova Wildcats? They go in as the number one seed and collapse as they always do. Overrated? Just a bad night. I called this one right from the start.
Well, you may disagree. I don't think they were overrated, even though this is the maybe third time under Jay Wright that they've been eliminated earlier than expected. They had a great season. They dominated the Big East. They finished the season really strong. I would hate to use the word choke when talking about college kids, but in that NC State game, they shot the ball poorly, they took a lot of dumb shots, and they were outworked and out-rebounded in the paint. Even with all that, they were still right there with a chance to win in the final minute, but couldn't get it done, and oh yeah, they did mess up a lot of people's brackets in the process. But I'm not going to say they were overrated. I'm going to just say it is more of just a bad game on their part at a very untimely time to do it.
Swib, what did you think?
Well, you know, from what I hear about Villanova, they live and they die by the outside shot, especially with this team right now. And anytime you have a team made up, built like that, you run the risk of not being on one game. I was with everybody else. I thought they would have an easy way into the Sweet 16, if not the Elite Eight and eventually the Final Four, but I was shocked. I was shocked that that they came out and they lost the way they did. Now, for how bad they played and how bad they shot, they still had a chance at the end. And unfortunately, they didn't get it done. But, Bill, as you asked, are they overrated? There's no bigger Villanova fan than myself in the area. I'm a big follower of Villanova basketball. I met Jay Wright a number of times at some functions in town, and he's always been very cordial, you know, just like one of the guys. But, you know, I was doing some research today. Since they went to the Final Four in 2009, 3 out of the last 5 years have either been a number one or number two seed, and they have not gotten through 2 rounds. To me, I think I'm not going to call for Jay Wright's head, but I think the deceit could be like a low flame under it right now.
I agree with you. I mean, the guy is a great recruiter. He comes in, he's always in the top classes, and they always have nice seasons. And the same thing happens to him every year. And I'm going to be with you, Chet. I don't ever call college kids chokers. They're college kids, but.
Yeah,
and as you said, Swit, if you're going to play in that outside game, and that's what they've done for the last handful of years, it's just a matter of time. And you go cold. It happens to every team that does it. We'll see. You know, Gonzaga's a lot like that, and they've been snake bit every year. And so far this year, they're still hanging. But same thing happens to them every year. So I don't know. You know, if the people on the main line may be quite happy with getting as far as they get. I don't know if the national championship is the goal for them. And he runs a great program. He runs a clean program, and they're very successful. So maybe that's okay, but I'd sure like to see them bring these good teams and do a little better in the tournament.
There was some interesting feedback on some of the local radio stations and on social media over when they got eliminated. And, you know, a couple of people had said that Jay Wright should be, you know, less worried about his wardrobe and matching ties, shirts, and his sport coats and suits, and more worried about running a better offense. So, they were on full force on Villanova or after Villanova after that. So, I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, you get some of the wise guys out there, you know, and, you know, getting on Jay's wardrobe.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's to me is just somebody trying to find something to get after somebody about. But, if somebody wants to pay you to advertise their suits, by gosh, advertise their suits and make your money. Nothing wrong with that. But, hey, what about UCLA? They sneak in over a Temple team that most thought shouldn't have gotten into the tournament. Now, they've won 2 games. They're sitting in the Sweet 16. And the Temple Owls, they go over to the NIT. And they're playing quite well. They're 25-10. They play tonight against a pretty good Louisiana Tech Bulldog team who's 27-8. This is a big game for the Owls as well.
That's what.
Yeah, I look at Temple. If you put Temple and UCLA face to face, and you got one spot, you know, for the tournament. Listen, I'm a big local college basketball fan, and that includes Temple. But when you're comparing, in my opinion, when you're comparing the American Athletic Conference with the Pac-12, and you're both very comparable, the committee goes with the sexy choice 9 out of 10 times. And I think you'll get better ratings with UCLA. Now, as you said, Bill, they are on the way to the Sweet 16, and they had 2 fantastic wins. But I think, you know, you go on style points, and again, I think the committee went with the sexier pick as opposed to going with Temple, who, by everybody's opinion, should be in over UCLA.
Yeah, and of course, Temple only had the one real big win over Kansas. They lost to SMU, 3 times, and SMU is the team that ends up losing to UCLA. So it makes it look like the committee made the right choice by putting UCLA in.
Absolutely. Wait, Chet, we're down to the Sweet 16. Anybody going to knock off those Kentucky Wildcats?
right, Kentucky's certainly still the team to beat, Bill. Let's get that right out there. It'll be an upset if they're not at least in the final on April 6th. But for the record, I actually have Kentucky losing to Arizona in the semifinals, and I have Arizona winning the title by beating Duke in the final. This is just a hunch or maybe a stupid guess on my part. Actually, what it is, you know, being in the pool with like 75 other people, which is what I'm in, and knowing that two-thirds of them were going to pick Kentucky, I just decided to take a different route. So I went with Arizona to beat Kentucky and to win it all. So maybe I'll get lucky. You never know.
Well, you know, Villanova did beat Georgetown, and NC State did beat Houston. So, I mean, it can happen.
It can happen.
It can happen.
It can happen.
But,
yep.
You know, this is an awful good basketball team. And, you know, the second five at Kentucky might be good enough to win this tournament. And they're that good and they're that deep. And, man, just imagine if they still had all their players that didn't do one and done and get out of there, how good they'd be.
You talk about a good recruiter, man. He's got it going on down there.
Yes, he does. Well, I guess when you can tell him one season and go to the NBA and become a millionaire, it's pretty easy to get the guys there.
Yep.
So,
yeah, well, I don't think anybody.
Go ahead, Swit.
Oh, real quick, I was just going to say, I don't think anybody beats Kentucky. I'm going to stick with the chalk, and I think they'll wind up winning it this year. And but the other thing I was going to chime in with, I'd like to see Kentucky go on, you know, maybe a little tour and play a couple of NBA teams. I think they could beat about five or six of the NBA teams that are out there right now.
Don't start that,
I'm going to disagree with that. I'm going to disagree with that. I just believe that any NBA team that's got, even the 76ers, with maybe has a bunch of D-League players, but I still think they got to be better than a team of especially freshman college players. Hey, Chet, we're just a few weeks away from opening day for the Phils, and I know it's a rite of passage for you, rite of passage day for you to show up on opening day, so I have to ask you, will you be at Citizens Bank Park Monday, April 6th when the Red Sox come to town?
Well, the bad news, Bill, my wife booked our spring vacation without really consulting me about the dates, and so we're going to be out of town. I'll give you a hint. It's the place with the famous mouse, and it's in Orlando, Florida, when the Phillies open the season on the 6th, which means I will miss just my second ever home opener since the new ballpark opened. So, yeah, I'm a little disappointed. As for the team, hey, they're 11-11 in spring training games. Ryan Howard has 3 homers, 9 RBI. Rule 5 outfielder Odubel Herrera is fun to watch, even when he's trying to run down a fly ball in center field. And one of their hitting leaders is 31-year-old outfielder Brian Bogusevich, who's got 3 homers and is hitting around .370. So I know their starting pitching is frighteningly bad, but heck, both Jonathan Papelbon and Jake Diekman say they believe the Phils can contend in the NL East. So who am I to argue? You have to at least like their attitude. Right, Swit?
Well, I know you guys aren't doing predictions tonight, but I'm hoping a little bit later tonight you give me the floor and let me pick let me give out my number of wins. But you know it's going to be an interesting year because the thing is right now they're obviously trying to move Howard. They would move Hamels in the right deal, and I don't know what to make out of this team. You know, there are a lot of unanswered questions. You're going to get a chance to see some young players. I think Freddie Gallis, as much as I wasn't real high on him, he's actually hitting pretty respectable this spring, and he's Gold Glove caliber fielder. If he could hit 260 or even 250 on an everyday basis, you know, and you know keep playing at you know Gold Glove caliber shortstop, I think he's going to be a real bright spot. On the other hand. A little disappointed by Mikel Franco, expecting more out of him. Thought he had a chance to win a roster spot this year, and he did absolutely nothing this spring. Really disappointed with him.
Well, let me tell you, guys, haven't been to many spring training games. They are absolutely meaningless.
Oh, yeah.
As far as pretty much anything. As far as, Chet, you mentioned Bogusevich or whatever, however you pronounce his name.
Yeah.
I was at the game that he hit his 2 of his 3 home runs. He did it over here against the Tigers. Two nice balls, no doubt. But, you know, it's just a workout. It's just a workout. It's pretty much meaningless as far as anything, as long as guys stay healthy. Obviously, if they get hurt, that's an issue. But, you know, it's just guys getting work. And, Sweat, I hate to say this about Freddie Galvis, but Freddie Galvis cannot play in the big leagues. He cannot not hit big league pitching. He won't hit 260 if there's nobody in the field.
I know Freddie is hitting 280 in the spring, which I know doesn't mean a whole lot, but he's got 14 hits and 50 at-bats. All 14 of his hits are singles, and he doesn't have any walks, which means his batting average is the same as his on-base percentage and his slugging average. So they're all right at 280, which he's not going to hit in the regular season anyway.
Yeah. Well, I do think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who even makes the squad. You know, this Danks is playing every day. He's a 28, 29-year-old journeyman. Bogdanovich, whatever. I think he's a 31-year-old guy.
But I do like Herrera, the Rule 5 guy.
I don't know who's going to even make this club.
What do you think of Herrera?
I haven't gotten to see him live yet. He didn't play the couple times I've seen him.
He's certainly got speed. He struggled when they've had him in center field the last week, several games. He's really struggling to run down the balls. But, I mean, the guy can run. He's fast. He's got 5 stolen bases, and he is lighting it up at the plate, too, hitting .348 in the spring. So I think they're going to keep him as a Rule 5 guy, and hopefully, you know, he can develop, make for some excitement if they have him and Ben Rivera at the top of the lineup. At least they'll be fun to watch when they get on base. They'll steal some bases and, you know, maybe get the crowd into it, the small crowd it's going to be at CBP.
I was just going to say, wasn't he the guy that won the Venezuelan League or one of those winter leagues batting championship, right? Batting title?
You may be right. They got him from where? San Diego? And, he's from Venezuela otherwise. So, yeah, I think you're right about that. Swit?
Yeah.
Oh, I saw an interesting number. If you compare Herrera and I'm drawing a blank. The center fielder from last year.
Ben Revere.
That Sandberg's playing him in left. If you combine Revere and Herrera's hits, they have 85 extra base hits in the last two seasons combined. That's not real optimistic going into the season, but the guy you're talking about, I believe his name is pronounced Bogusevic, Brian Bogusevic.
Yeah, that could be.
But,
I'm interested to see because Darren Ruff is still in this mix somewhere. And again, I think for whatever reason, I think he's an odd man out. I don't think he's going to make this team. And, we'll see. But, you know, you got Don Brown, you got Revere, you got this guy you're talking about. We've got a couple other guys. I just don't see there being room for Darren Ruff again.
All right. Well, Bill and I are going to make our predictions next week. But, Swit, since we have you here, what do you think? Are they going to be right around 100 losses, or are you a little more optimistic at least?
No, not at all. I saw in Las Vegas, I think the over-under number was 68.5, depending on what book you're looking at. But I think they're well over that. Now, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're going to win 87 ball games like I did last year. So a little short of that, but the thing is, and I want to go on record, if the roster stays the way it is for the most part, and Howard's here for the whole season, and Hamels is here for the whole season, I think they will win anywhere between 78 and 80 games.
Wow!
I think if Howard is here the whole season, and that's a big if at this point, because it's obviously they're trying to move him. I think he puts up numbers, 30 home runs, well over 100 RBIs, 110, 15 RBIs, something like that. And before he hurt his Achilles, I thought Dominic Brown was going to have a pretty good season. It's just a hunch, but there are going to be plenty of opportunities for him, and maybe it's spring, and I'm the internal optimist here, but I would say 78 wins.
Sweet, if they win 78, I will buy you a case of that Kool-Aid that you're drinking, and Ryan Sandberg will be a lock for Manager of the Year. How's that?
Yeah, they would still be under 500. I don't know about Manager of the Year.
No, but I know, but it would be amazing if they win 78 games, Sweet.
I will double that. I will add a case of Kool-Aid as well.
There you go.
Now just because it's not a just an off the cuff prediction. I think with the National League East, I think with the exception of the Nationals, you don't know what you have. I think the Braves definitely took a step back. The Mets, you don't know what the Mets have pitching problems. Wheeler's out for the year. You don't know what you're going to get out of Harvey. The Marlins are still the Marlins until proven otherwise. I think there are going to be more wins out there than everybody thinks.
So you're aware they won 73 games the last 2 years, right?
Oh, I'm well aware of it. And for the record, before the show, I was actually going to go with 80 wins, but I thought I would bring it down to. But, yeah, there is a method. I mean, I think that the National League East as a whole has taken a step back.
All right, Bill, we better change the topic and let Swit take his medication.
Absolutely, I agree, because if we have to ask him who's going to pitch, that, you know, I don't know who's going to pitch, but we'll get to that another day. Swit, I did want to ask you, because I know you're a big hockey guy, and what in the world happened to the Flyers since they were, you know, somewhat eliminated in that heartbreaking loss in Boston several weeks ago? They've melted down, and, you know, I think it's pretty safe to say here in the last couple of weeks it looks like Craig Berube's lost his team, and he's probably not long for sticking around.
No, I agree with you, Bill. The thing with Berube, I wasn't sold on him being named the head coach when they did it early last season. But some of his moves have been more than questionable. And dealing with personnel, I mean, the Steve Mason thing, the one that sticks out the most, it just blows my mind. I mean, they put Mason in when he was obviously hurt. He shouldn't even been dressed, let alone being put in the game. In turn, Jeff Reese was fired, let go, which was one of Mason's stable ponies, if you will, kind of kept him in line, was a big influence when he came over from Columbus. So that was a questionable decision on Berube's part. And the other one is he has mismanaged Vincent LeCavalier more than you can mismanage a player. I mean, first of all, he's a proven goal scorer. Granted, he hasn't done much the last couple of years, but you got to put the guy in a position to succeed. He puts him on the fourth line with Zach Rinaldo and whatever other mucker and grinder you want to pair him with, and you don't give the guy a chance. And not only that, he's out of position. He's playing right wing when he's never played the right wing before. So those two things stick out the most when you're talking about Craig Berube. I think he has lost the locker room. I think it's obvious. And but from an on-ice standpoint, the goaltending has been a plus for the most part this year. The defense has certainly had its ups and downs, but the number one problem, and we all know that, is goal scoring. I mean, last year the Flyers had, I believe they had 720 goal scorers. This year they have three. They'll be lucky to get four. And it's just you need scoring more than the power play. The power play's been good for the most part. They're in the top part of the league. But 5-on-5, they just can't score. And you got to be able to score 5-on-5 to get anything done in the National Hockey League.
And they got to do better on the penalty kill. And I don't know what they're going to do about it, but they're consistently awful year after year when a game goes to overtime and a shootout. Their record is horrible on that front and has been for years. I feel badly for Ed Snyder, the owner, when the Flyers won back-to-back cups 40 years ago and went to the finals again in 76, probably thought that he'd have 6 or 8 cups by now, but here he is at age 82, and here we are in 2015, still waiting for that third cup, which doesn't look like it's on the horizon anytime soon. And Mr. Snyder, based on his comments in an interview with the Daily News, sounds like he's getting a bit impatient, and I don't blame him.
Well, and the thing is with Mr. Snyder, too, Chad, good point there. It sets me up perfectly for what I was going to say. And then he did an interview, I believe it was with Sam Dinellen, yesterday, and he says he has the current pieces, some of the current pieces on this roster to make a cup run next year. I don't see it. As much as I'm an optimist for the Flyers, I just do not see it.
I'm with you, Switch.
All right. Well, hey Chuck, Chad, we're running out of a little bit of time, and I really wanted to – we're going to skip over to Sixers part for right now. We'll come back to that next week. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the passing of Eagles legend Chuck Bednarik. You and I have had some good talks about the Chuck Bednarik, Dave Van Buren era in the past.
All right. Well, as soon as I heard the news on Saturday, Bill, I thought back on one of our Philly Press Box radio visits with the great Ray Didinger, who didn't hesitate when I asked him about the three greatest Eagles of all time. As he put it, easy one. Number three, Reggie White. Number two, Steve Van Buren. Number one, Chuck Bednarik. And a little side note, Ray and I exchanged emails over the weekend when I complimented him on his tribute to Bednarik that aired on Comcast Sportsnet. He thanked me, and he reaffirmed how much he admired Bednarik, the player, for his toughness, his durability. The guy missed just three games in 14 years, and his ability to play both center and linebacker at such a high level. And let me add this. Normally, I dread getting older, but one positive is that I've gotten to see so many great players back in the late 60s and 70s in their prime. But, you know, I've read so much, and I've just heard so many great things about Bednarik, how much of a great player he was. I wish, in this case, that I was another 15 years older than I am now, just so I could have seen him playing with the Eagles and helping them win the 1960 championship. So, yeah, Chuck Bednarik, rest in peace. You were a great one.
Absolutely. And you know, Chet, I believe, and I got to do my homework on this because I wasn't thinking of it till just now, I believe he is the only player that also played on the 49 championship team.
I believe he was a rookie in
49, and he played in the championship, and he also played on the 60 championship.
Played from 49 to 62, so yeah, two championships.
There you go. And you know, I posted on my Facebook page that what I think is an iconic football picture of him standing in the middle of the field when everyone was going off and on the field. There he was, just waiting for the next possession. And man, I'm with you. I'd love to have been young enough to get to see him play.
Yeah, he's certainly a legend.
And guys, I had a chance to meet Chuck many, many times in person. I grew up in the Lehigh Valley area. Chuck, I believe at the end was living in Coopersburg. He was from Bethlehem, and I just had a chance to meet him many times at sports banquets down in the area here. In fact, I ran into him at a local mall in the Lehigh Valley many years ago, talked to him for 15, 20 minutes. It seemed like we were, you know, friends from many, many years ago. He was just a real, real genuine guy, and one thing about him, he loved signing autographs. He loved being around the fans. And, in fact, when he would sign his name, he would then take it and show everybody within earshot of him and to admire his immaculate penmanship. And he just hated the way guys sign their names these days. He just couldn't get over when I showed him some of the other autographs I was getting the evening I got him to sign. And he had some colorful comments as far as the penmanship of some of the other celebrities in attendance. And, you know, he was very proud of the way he signed his name and just couldn't have been a nicer guy. He kind of reminded me of, either an uncle or a grandfather, just a real, real genuine guy, kind of a surly guy, but a great guy.
And the amazing thing is he was able to sign those autographs so nicely with those hands that were just so messed up from, you know, arthritis and years of the physical pounding that they took playing football. He's often shown pictures with his hand up in the air and all those fingers just like, you know, gnarly and crooked and kind of scary looking, to be honest.
I actually had a chance to meet him years ago myself, and I shook his hand, and it was almost scary. I mean, it really was. That thing was just going in all kinds of different places.
What he used to do, if he shook hands with, like, say, a young fan, he would throw his finger up, straight up, just put it out of place on purpose, and then look at the young fan and say, "What'd you do to my hand?" And then everybody, of course, would get a big laugh out of it, and he would pop it back into place.
That's funny.
That is funny. All right. Well, hey, Chet, our friends at Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, they're celebrating their 20th anniversary this year, doing it with a bang. They've got a bunch of signings coming up I wanted to let our fans and you know about, since you like to frequent Carl's. New Flyer Ryan White signing that was scheduled for March the 26th has been canceled. However, Flyers voices Lauren Hart and Lou Nolan will be there on April the 4th, and former Eagles Jamal Jackson and Ike Reese on April 11th. And Carl just announced that Philly's 1980 world champion second baseman Manny Trio will be in the store on April the 12th. Carl's does a great job getting guests in, and we hope everybody can support his efforts. His Facebook page and a website, so please check that out for all signings, costs, and details. And, Chet, I can tell you, I am all over that Manny Trio. Need him for the collection.
Ah, yeah, and I love Carl's place. I'm definitely hoping to check out that April 4th Lauren Hart, Lou Nolan event. So that should be fun.
Very good. Swift, have you ever been down to Carl's?
No, I know where it is, but I've never been in there before, no.
You got to check it out.
I'm going to get by there sometime.
It's like going to a Philly kid going to a Philly sports candy store. It's pretty cool, and be sure you bring your money, because you're going to have some things you're going to want to buy.
Yeah, I saw some pictures on Facebook and their website. It looks like an awesome place.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, Chet, 30 seconds. You have a parting shot for this week?
Just the tip of the hat to one of our favorite ex-Flyers, Kimmo Tiiminen, who's back in town with his new team, the Blackhawks, for the first time tonight. I hope he picks up his first point with the Hawks this evening in Philly. And further, I hope he ends his career with a Stanley Cup, even if it is as a Blackhawk. There you go.
All right. Swift, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for having me on again, guys. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun to be on with you guys. And to the Kool-Aid drinkers, and I say it with all due respect and affection, hopefully we buried the hatchet, and I just wanted to extend the olive branch and say no harm done with my comments about Chip Kelly.
All right.
And my parting shot is looking forward to the Sweet 16 round and getting to the Final Four. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Baseball season's around the corner. Draft is coming up quickly. There's a lot going on, and Chet, we need to talk in our next show about I Hate Christian Laettner. What a great show. Did you get to watch the 30 for 30?
I have not watched it yet, but I got it on my DVR. I recorded it last night when they re-aired it. I've heard so many people talking about it, so I definitely want to watch that one, yes.
We have to talk about that maybe on our next show if you get an opportunity to watch it.
And we're doing our Phillies preview next week, 1 week from tonight, and we'll have a special guest to announce soon.
All right. Sounds good. Well, hey, we'd like to thank Steve Swickowitz for joining us, as well as Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor shop for Kisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chatchesco, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, April 1st. You can listen to our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.